Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
From KQED.
From KQED in San Francisco, I'm politics editor Scott Schaefer, in for Alexis Madrigal. In November, San Francisco voters will decide whether or not to give London Breed another 4 years as mayor. Polls show San Franciscans are in a very bad mood over things like crime and homelessness, and the mayor's apparent political weakness has lured several strong challengers into the race. Board of Supervisors President Aaron Peskin, former supervisor and venture capitalist Mark Farrell, and philanthropist Daniel Lurie are all making a run for her job. And the odds are scrambled by ranked choice voting, all making for a very interesting race. We'll delve into it next, right after this news. Good morning and welcome to Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, in today for Alexis Madrigal. Well, anyone who visits or lives in San Francisco knows that the city has been plagued with problems, problems that are often right out in the open, from homeless encampments and auto break-ins to big-name retailers like Macy's fleeing the city, and a downtown that's been very slow to recover from the pandemic. All of that and more will be hotly debated between now and November as voters consider whether to re-elect Mayor London Breed for another 4 years or choose from several alternatives on the right, left, and middle of San Francisco's political spectrum. It's anyone's guess who's going to prevail, especially given the city's ranked choice voting system. So this hour, we're going to dig into the issues, challenges, and candidates for mayor with two veteran journalists who've covered the city for many, many years. With me here in the studio, Heather Knight. She is the San Francisco bureau chief for the New York Times, and before that, as you may know, covered City Hall and San Francisco for the Chronicle. Also with us, Joe Fitzgerald Rodriguez, reporter and producer covering politics for us right here at KQED News. Hey, both of you, welcome.
Thank you for having us.
Well, as you both know, you don't have a lot of people, strong candidates running for a job like mayor, unless it's either an open seat or an incumbent who is deemed to be vulnerable. So Heather, starting with you, what is the mayor's vulnerability, and you know, why are so many people interested in a job that seems so tough?
That's a good question. Well, poll after poll is showing that San Franciscans are just not satisfied with Mayor London Breed. Her approval ratings are about a third. People are not optimistic about the future of our city. They don't think it's on the right track. So if any incumbent was ever vulnerable, it's her. Leading the city through a pandemic, of course, is a huge challenge, and we have a lot of issues still ahead. So, but you're right, it's kind of shocking that so many people actually want to try to lead this city.
Yeah, and we'll get into some of this, the particulars of the issues and the candidates. But Joe, what would you add to that? I mean, London Breed was easily elected 4 years ago with token opposition. After Ed Lee died, she was the interim mayor, and then Mark Farrell took over. We'll talk about that as well. But what would you say? How many of her problems would you say are related to the pandemic?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, coming out of the pandemic, you know, a lot of folks started worrying a lot about crime. And we see that in the polls. We see that in the messaging from the candidates. The candidates are talking a lot about what they would do about crime and public safety and homelessness and fentanyl. And that is where they're sensing her vulnerability.
And you have written about all these things, Heather, and also things like the city's bureaucracy and lack of efficiency. When you look at polls, people always list, either the economy, jobs, but really homelessness and some of the issues Joe just mentioned. But how would you describe the city as a functioning government?
Not so great. red tape is a huge problem, as I've written a lot about. I think anybody who tries to do what would be a pretty easy thing in a lot of cities around the country, like, a little remodel to your own house that you own, can turn into a gigantic, years-long, huge issue with neighbors. And it just seems like the city's departments don't work very well, and it's really easy to just trip up on things that should be a slam dunk.
And Joe, you've done some reporting reporting on how some of those problems, like with the Department of Building Inspections, planning, have gotten kind of caught up in some investigations and convictions.
Oh, right. I mean, you know, it's an easy thing to miss for some who aren't like closely connected. But the reason that we see this corruption crop up in the first place is you shouldn't have to pay someone $30,000 under the table to navigate a permitting system.
And that, in fact, was very much at the heart of some convictions. Absolutely. With Walter Wong and others.
We've seen folks in all levels of city government indicted by the FBI, and the recurring theme with a lot of it is trying to pay them off in order to smooth through Byzantine levers that need to be pulled in order to approve contracts or to get your house built, from small things like that to large things like multi-million-dollar homelessness and lighting contracts.
Heather, we talked to Willie Brown a week or so ago, and as you can imagine, he had a lot of things to say about the state of the city.
He's just such a quiet guy.
including, I was surprised at how critical he was of the mayor for shutting down the city as completely as she did. And she wasn't the only one, of course. The whole Bay Area really shut down during the pandemic very early. Is there any resentment about that still, do you think, or are some of the lingering problems that we see a result of that?
I hear from parents that they're still really frustrated by the state of the school district and how that was one of the districts in the entire country which was shut down the longest. She fought to reopen, but that was not successful, led to the recall and a lot of drama, and still seeing repercussions in the schools with dropping enrollment. So I think that is where I hear the most frustration still.
And Joe, we hear from the other candidates that the city is a mess, the city is crumbling. But then you talk to other folks. I was talking with somebody just the other day who works for the Convention and Visitors, you know, Visit SF groups, and they're seeing a lot of improvement in the city. And I think a lot of people might say that. I've had visitors who come here and say, oh, you know, it's not as bad as I thought it was. So is the city crumbling, or is it, you know, on the road back, or a little of both?
I think, you know, perception plays a funny role in a lot of this, right, Scott? Like, you know, the data has actually shown crime is not as bad as has been in previous years, previous decades. But how people feel about crime, how people feel about the state of things has played such an outsized role. And so that's one thing that I think is on the top of a lot of folks' minds coming into this mayor's race is, will that perception lag catch up? Will all of a sudden people in a few months go, you know, things are actually better? Or will that perception stay down no matter what the data actually shows us?
Yeah, is it baked into how people feel about the mayor or not? And of course, Heather, before all this, in the past several years, we've seen, you know, kind of a shift to the middle, at least by San Francisco standards. Some would say it's gone to the far right. But we recalled Chesa Boudin, the district attorney, some members of the school board who kind of dithered about reopening schools while they were talking about renaming schools. What are your thoughts about, you know, how that connects to the mood that the city seems to be in right now?
I think that people are just really eager for a city hall that functions. So some people say that's far right. I think it's more common sense. You know, they just want a department that works, whether it's the schools or the building department or, you know, the police department. They want them to show up when they call 911. So I think they just are eager for a functional city government that's not so ideological.
I mean, and when we get into the details, that's when we see some of these things kind of crop up, the ideological things we're talking about. Like, for instance, like an actual policy to drug test welfare users, that's been a Fox News talking point for years and a Republican proposal for years. So there are some ways where we go, yeah, people just want the city to work. But when we see the actual proposals, some of those are actually straight from Republican playbooks. So yes, there is a move to a center sometimes. And there is, I think, sometimes an exaggeration of San Francisco's liberal bastion. We are a city that has had a conservative strain for a long time.
And I'm wondering, you know, we've seen in this past election cycle or two the rise of these moderate groups like Grow SF, funded in large part by tech money. And I'm wondering, do you feel like they're, you know, they did, quote unquote, take over the D-Trip, the Democratic County Central Committee, which makes endorsements, which around election time can make a big difference when people get those mailers and they say, oh, the Democratic Party is endorsing so-and-so. What impact? What do you make of that whole thing, that whole movement, and the impact it could have?
Well, sure. And the thing that I think that pretends is they're building their benches. So the moderate Democrats saw a problem a few years ago that they didn't have a lot of candidates waiting in the wings to come up and be the future supervisors, future mayors. So when you have people run and go on something very low ballot, down ballot, like the Democratic County Central Committee, which is the arm of the Democratic Party board, right? They will move on. I mean, I remember when Raphael Mandelman was on the DCCC. I mean, Aaron Peskin was on the DCCC. All these folks were there at one point, and then they were supervisors, and now who knows?
Let's talk about some of the candidates. Aaron Peskin is the most recent one to jump in, and in many ways the most interesting. President of the Board of Supervisors, he's been a fixture at City Hall for many years. He left the board for a time. He came back. He represents Chinatown, North Beach, and parts of the Embarcadero, that area of the city. Has had strong support in the Chinese community in the past. What do you make of him, Heather, as a person and a candidate and, you know, maybe the kind of mayor he would be?
Everybody says he's very smart. He seems to know everything in the city charter, like any regulation, he knows it. I think he could be a good manager of these departments, which has been a big knock on Lyndon Breed, that she just doesn't manage her own departments very well. But, you know, on the other hand, people are skeptical about his message of recovery. He's known for having a temper, and he admitted an alcohol problem a few years ago, and he was seen to be visibly intoxicated in meetings during the pandemic. So he says that he's recovered, and he's tying that to how San Francisco needs to recover, too. So we'll see if people buy that or not.
Yeah, it's interesting. In his very first ad, he talks about being in recovery himself, and he knows about recovery. The city needs to recover, and he's the perfect person right. to do that. What do you, you know, some, it's easy to say, oh, I'm a different person now that I'm not drinking. Maybe that's true. You know, Joe, what are your thoughts about that?
Well, we've seen other candidates and other politicians go through recovery. Gavin Newsom went through recovery quite famously, right? And, you know,
Or said he did
at least. Yes, exactly. And, you know, whether folks forgive that, I think, is up to the moment. I mean, I hate to say it, but we're in this kind of post-Trump era where people kind of enjoy a strong personality, strong is maybe not the right word, but a brashness, people going against convention, even in sometimes odd ways. And I don't know if we have the same reaction now that we may have had 5 years ago, 6 years ago.
Heather, the first person to jump in was somebody who's never run for office before, Daniel Lurie. He founded Tipping Point, which is a charitable organization. He's a philanthropist. He is marketing himself as an outsider who just wants to make the city run better. Based on what you know about how the city runs now and what makes it work or not work, how would an outsider just in general do?
I think it's funny that he is an heir to the Levi Strauss fortune, and his mother's a billionaire, and he's the outsider.
I am a billionaire outsider.
Yeah. But like I said, everyone says Aaron Peskin is super smart. Everybody says Daniel Lurie is like the nicest person in the city, and he
can a nice person, you know, have, can a nice person do what it takes? I mean, do you need an iron fist to kind of get things done?
Right. It's also amusing that his big message is, I'm not associated with this mess at all.
Don't blame me. Don't blame me. I can fix it. All right. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to take your phone calls as well. Give us a ring at 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786, or you can find us on Twitter X, all the social media channels. We're at KQED Forum, or if you like, you can also email us. We're at forum@kqed.org. We're going to continue this conversation about the mayor's race. How are you feeling about the city? How are you feeling about the mayor? What kind of leadership do you think the city needs in the next 4 years? And what are your thoughts, if any, about those who are challenging Lyndon Breed for the job? We'll be right back. And welcome back to Forum. Scott Schaefer here this morning for Alexis Madrigal. We're talking about the San Francisco mayor's race It's not until November, but, you know, it's San Francisco. It's kind of a hobby and a sport to follow politics in the city. We're talking about it with Heather Knight, New York Times San Francisco bureau chief, formerly with The Chronicle, and Joe Fitzgerald Rodriguez, KQED News reporter and producer who covers politics for us. And joining us now, Jane Kim. She is a former member of the Board of Supervisors, also ran for mayor in 2018, and she is joining us now. She's director of California Working Families Party. Jane Kim, welcome.
Welcome. How are you?
Doing well. Thanks for joining us. Well, I'm not sure how much of that conversation you just heard, but give us your take on, you know, the state of the city. And let's talk a little bit about housing, because housing has become such a flashpoint in the city for a number of reasons. And we'll get into some of those details. But what are your thoughts about what the city needs right now?
Well, I mean, we've seen the polling, and there is, I think, a very strong desire from the polling that we've seen that people just want the city to work. So whether that means ensuring that our streets are clean, that we're helping to house and treat those that are living on our streets and need it, and also the feeling of safety. But I think most importantly, we want to see our small businesses come back more evenly. Especially in the downtown area, and see offices reopen downtown.
And the mayor, who I talked with last week before she went off to China, talked about some of the tax breaks and, you know, waiving of fees to help small businesses, and that we're beginning to see some of that bear fruit in the city with new businesses starting. What is your take on her leadership for the past 4 years?
The mayor has, been in leadership for the last 6 years. And I think during COVID, she made some really important decisions that kept our city safer. And now we're in need of bringing our city together. And that's a tough job to do, even for a mayor. But I think it's the job that only the mayor and the mayor's office can do, is to bring all the stakeholders to the table from a diversity of perspectives and communities to help right the city back. San Francisco is a beautiful city, and we are so lucky that people want to live here and will always continue to want to live here simply because of the infrastructure we have, the beauty, and of course, the job and employer infrastructure. And I haven't seen that yet from the mayor's office. And I'm hoping in this election year that there will be more motivation for the mayor's administration to bring folks together, and not just their allies, but the folks that they don't want to work with as well.
Yeah. We've seen in the last few years and a growing political clout in the Chinese community, the AAPI community more generally. It's not just in Chinatown, of course. It's in the Richmond. It's in the Sunset, the Excelsior, all over the city, really. What are your thoughts about that community? The mayor, I think, did quite well with them when she ran last time in 2019. What are you hearing now?
Well, the San Francisco Chronicle ran a poll of candidates earlier this year, and one of their key findings was that the highest number of undecided voters was in the API community, and that nearly half said they hadn't decided on a candidate yet. And anecdotally, what I'm hearing is that, people want to see the outcomes from this administration. And I think that there is some doubts about how much this administration is actually invested in the Chinese American and API community, how much they understand the needs of the community. But there's also an openness to, giving this administration an opportunity this year as well. It's not like any other candidate has yet emerged that is really speaking to the community yet. That being said, Peskin just made his announcement recently. He's someone who's represented Chinatown, and this is a sector of the API community, for, 18 years. And so I think it remains to be seen the impact that his candidacy will have in this race.
Joe, last week I did a little bit of a merchant walk with Mayor Breed out on Irving, which is, of course, a lot of Chinese folks live out there, AAPI folks. And, those things are a little curated sometimes. There'll be like advanced people that go in to make sure that there's not going to be a hostile reception. But in general, it seemed like, people they weren't hostile. I'll say that much, at least even people who, walked up to her on the streets. But what is your sense of the issue of housing in particular? Because, we have seen the mayor say that the Board of Supervisors, and Aaron Peskin in particular, have really been an obstacle to building more housing, more dense housing, higher housing, and so on. How does that play, do you think, within, you know, the Chinese AAPI community more generally?
Well, I just think back to, you know, you're talking about Irving Street, to these protests I attended on Irving Street at a police credit union where there are members of the AAPI community, crowds of them, you know, rallying against taller developments there. While at the same time, some of the people speaking were people from Chinatown talking about how they wanted affordable housing there in that district so that they could move out of the single room occupancy hotels and finally have a real apartment. And I think that that little story kind of illustrates that there is different communities who want different things. There's landlords, there's tenants. At Peskin's rally, there was Wing Hu Leung spoke. He was the head of the Community Tenants Association with like 1,700 members, most greatly representing the AAPI community. He's a Cantonese speaker. And those folks were really backing Peskin. At the same time, we may see that Mayor Breed's housing stances to build will get the attention of those landlords and people who don't want development in their areas.
Yeah. And Jane, what are your thoughts about, I know a lot of times sort of this is a, you know, a bit of a stereotype, but the west side of town oftentimes likes things the way they are, so to speak. They don't want more density. They don't necessarily, you know, want the character of their neighborhoods to change. And we're seeing, you know, possibly Mayor Breed will be running with housing as a particular platform, more housing, although she's recently moderated that a little bit to come, frankly, a little closer to what Aaron Peskin has been saying. How do you see that issue in the AAPI community in particular?
Well, most AAPI voters that I speak to don't believe that greater density is going to achieve more affordable housing. Those two things aren't the same things. People can want more affordable housing and not believe that higher tall, you know, higher skyscrapers are going to bring it. In fact, you know, the district that I represented, where we in fact built very high and very densely, we built a lot of luxury with inclusionary units that are set aside for working class and middle class families. What voters of all communities want to see is more affordable housing. And that includes housing for people that are middle class, that are just earning an average income here in the city, that are also feeling the squeeze and are feeling priced out even after COVID when rents softened a bit. I have not heard housing being the top issue among AAPI voters. What I hear is public safety, number one, and two, and a candidate that really cares about and understands and is sensitive to the issues in the AAPI community. And I think that's the big question mark for voters right now, is which of the mayoral candidates really is understanding of and sympathetic to the needs of the AAPI community.
All right. That's Jane Kim, former San Francisco supervisor. She's the head of Working Families Party here in California. Jane, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Heather, let me come back to some of these candidates. We've talked a little bit about Peskin, briefly about Daniel Lurie. Mark Farrell also got in recently, former supervisor, represented the Marina, Pacific Heights, and has a real history with London Breed in that after Ed Lee died, she became acting mayor, and then she was deposed, essentially, taken out of that job by the Board of Supervisors, led by Aaron Peskin, and put Mark Farrell into that job. So he was the interim mayor until the election the following year, later that year. What is your take on him? He's come out really kind of, by San Francisco standards, to the right.
Right, yeah. Yeah, he and London Breed definitely no love lost there. So I'm eager to see those debates. They should be.
Oh, man.
But yeah, he definitely seems to be tacking to the right. Again, this is all related to San Francisco politics. So,
sure.
But I was kind of surprised to see him come out of the gate saying, we want cars back on Market Street. That seemed to be kind of a fight I wasn't expecting anybody to pick in the mayor's race.
That as kind of a pro-business position?
Yes, uh-huh. And then he also said on day one he'll fire the police chief. He wants a lot more police officers. Another surprising thing he said was that anybody who overdoses and is given Narcan, I think twice, he would want to 5150 at SF General. So that's quite surprising.
Meaning
as well.
What exactly?
Well, right now, if people overdose on the sidewalks of the Tenderloin and are given Narcan, sometimes they're taken, you know, for care, but sometimes they're not and just left there. And he said that anybody where that happens twice should be put in a mandatory hold for 72 hours at SF General.
And we've recently seen sort of the care courts become the law of the land here in California, where people can be referred by friends, by emergency workers, first responders, and others to, you know, treatment and, you know, certainly a certain kind of confinement sometimes. And that doesn't really seem to be making much of an impact. I realize it's early still. But Joe, how do you see that kind of get tough, tough love, whatever, however you want to describe it, message that that Mark Farrell is leading with?
Well, in public safety, you have to kind of break through with your messaging, right? So that seems to be kind of the strategy here, is he's almost daring London Breed with like bolder and bolder proclamations in order to break through to voters and have them hear his message. So we haven't seen yet whether it's successful, but we will in the coming months. But it's an interesting strategy.
We're talking about the San Francisco mayor's race with Joe Fitzgerald Rodriguez from KQED and Heather Knight. She is the San Francisco bureau chief for the New York Times. Heather, you want to jump in?
Oh, yeah. Just one more thing on Mark Farrell is that he is really painting the city in very doom and gloom language and how we're crumbling and everything's going to hell in a handbasket under Mayor London Breed. And she's countering by saying there's still a lot of great things here, and she one of her press releases called him the mayor of Doom Loop City. So I thought that was funny.
Yeah, well, and it's interesting. Two things there. One, it's easy when you're the challenger to criticize
right.
the state of things because you're not responsible.
Sure.
On the other hand, the mayor kind of needs to be a cheerleader for the city, right?
Yeah. So I think that's going to be interesting to see how all of these candidates both say, you know. On the one hand, a lot of them are saying things are horrible in San Francisco, but on the other hand, they're saying, but it's a great city. So, you know, how do you strike that balance?
It's a tough needle to thread for London, right? Because she has to, at the same time, acknowledge the pain of voters who think that, you know, things are not safe and things are not going well, while also trying to reassure them that they're getting better. And yes, it's good now. It's a little bit of a this and that, and it's hard to hold both ideas.
Yeah, it's a little bit what the president's going through, I think, you know, because the economy, by the numbers, is doing quite well, but people aren't feeling it. And, you know, he's trying to say, oh, but things are great. But maybe you need to acknowledge the pain people are feeling at the same time at the pump and with mortgage rates and interest
totally.
Rates generally. We're talking about, of course, the mayor's race here in San Francisco. If you'd like to join us, give us a call, 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. Or you can reach us on social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter/X. We're at KQED Forum, or you can email us. It's forum@kqed.org. Sasha writes, I'm very disappointed in the role the media has had in creating a negative impression in San Francisco, both on a local and national level. They seemed more interested in titillating headlines than in truth and nuance. Heather, as somebody who was working for a local media outlet and now works for a national, The Times, New York Times, what's your take on that, the role of the media? I think maybe, you know, obviously there's the Fox News of the world, you know, the Newsmax, the ones who really love going after San Francisco because it's a liberal bastion, but, you know, others as well.
Yeah, it's definitely an easy punching bag for the right-wing media, and we've seen that a lot in the past 5 years, I'd say. But I think, you know, there has been a lot of negative things happening in the city, which the local media and national media have been fair to point out. But I've been trying to also showcase the brighter side of things as well. I think, you know, it is a lot to love and still be worried about in San Francisco both, as Joe was saying.
Wait, didn't the Chronicle coin the doom loop?
Yeah, not me. I didn't do that.
Like, hey now.
Yeah. Joe, we haven't mentioned another candidate who's in the race, Asha Safai, who is also a member of the Board of Supervisors. He got in, I think he was actually the first to get in before Daniel Lurie. Hasn't made a huge splash, has raised a bit of money, but, you know, I think he's probably not top of mind for voters, at least not yet.
Well, it's a tough road for him. Because, you know, for a long time, he has been a moderate ally. But as we've seen in the race, he has been tacking a bit left, a bit progressive. But it's not his natural base. So I think that's what you're kind of sensing, is that hasn't been playing to his natural base. He is allied with labor, and we may see him a little more prominently as talks with labor unions heat up.
All right. Well, let's go to the phones. And again, the number, if you want to join us, 866-733-6786. And let's go to Buck in San Francisco. Hey, Buck.
Well, this is like old home week. It's great to hear the three of you talking, although when I think of Heather, I call her ma'am now that she writes for the New York Times. But so I think it's really clear. Breed, Farrell, Lurie, I feel like Safi's kind of out of it now. And Peskin. I mean, Moritz, billionaire money, YIMBY, they really dominated the political conversation. And I don't feel like they're good for San Francisco. With Peskin, we have a guy with a solid track record of supporting neighborhoods, the broad population of San Francisco, and tremendous experience. Well, he actually even brought up stronger rent control, Costa Hawkins reform, at his kickoff. Moritz and the Together SF types don't support district elections. Don't you think it's interesting that district elections hasn't come up as an issue at all in this campaign? And I wonder if Breed, Farrell, and Lori support district elections.
Yeah, well, that's an interesting question. Obviously, Buck, you're paying very close attention. District election, this is, I hate to keep quoting Willie Brown, but he also went on a rant about district elections. We've had it for a long time here. How do you think it's working in terms of, making decisions that affect the whole city when you've got 11 supervisors who really represent a slice of the city? Anybody want to jump in on that, Joe?
Well, I mean, that's why we have a mayor, right? But, there have been various tries at reforming district elections for folks. But most of these folks you have to see are, business groups, downtown groups, folks like that. So you have to sense the motivations. They want to see changes to downtown and to other places that can increase the economic outlook of the city. So you have to think of that motivation when you're looking at reforming district elections. And honestly, in the neighborhoods, it hasn't really proved very popular. They like their district supervisor. It's like a little town mayor, for instance.
Yeah. I've often thought, especially given the number of supervisors we have, 11 for, 800,000 or so people. L.A. County has, five, I think, for 5 million people or whatever it is. And I've always thought a good system would be kind of a hybrid, maybe 3 at large and the rest, in maybe slightly larger districts. Buck, did you want to say something?
Buck's dying over there. No, don't do that.
Well, I think the thing that people forget is the Board of Supervisors don't have power over a single city department. You've got the mayor, you've got the chief administrative officer. So often I bump into somebody in my neighborhood, Bernal Heights, and they say, the light's out on my corner. Why isn't Supervisor Ronan fixing it? Because he's not in charge of the light on your corner. The chief administrative officer is over the Department of Public Works. So I think people have very basic confusion about how city government works.
All right.
I think district elections is great.
Although it's interesting is over the years, there was a mayor's department that oversaw neighborhood relations, right? And as the supervisors more and more took on relations with neighborhoods one-on-one, that department shrank to near invisibility.
Yeah. And Heather, we have seen – thanks, Buck, for the call, by the way. We have seen in recent years voters give the Board of Supervisors more power over things like appointments and giving them appointments to things like the SFMTA. And I think some of that was a reaction to Willie Brown, who they thought had too much power. But, what are your thoughts about that hybrid system where the board really gets to weigh in, as opposed to giving the mayor, who is the CEO, more authority to do those things?
Yeah, she still definitely holds most of the power. But I think that what's interesting is that the Board of Supervisors has become a real foil for her. So she can blame everything that's not working on them, even though if you look at the way the city actually runs, most of it is on her. So.
Yeah. And we've seen, of course, many, many mayors being angry with the Board of Supervisors over one thing or another. So it's certainly not unique to London Breed. All right. We are going to take a short break. And when we continue, we're going to take more of your calls and comments. Give us a call at 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786. Or on social media, we're at KQED Forum. Or email us. We're forum@kqed.org. And welcome back to Forum. Scott Schaefer here this hour for Alexis Madrigal. We're talking about the mayor's race in San Francisco, which is not until November, the election, that is, but we're certainly talking about it and thinking about it. Heather Knight, New York Times San Francisco bureau chief, is with us, and Joe Fitzgerald Rodriguez, who covers politics for us here at KQED. And we want to hear from you as well. Give us a ring at 866-733-6786, whether or not you live here, because so many people, whether they work here, live here, they come here for restaurants or shopping, not as much as they used to, but you do come into the city, so we want to hear from you as well. All right, let's go back to the phones, and Peter in San Francisco, you're next.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking the call. I wanted to get the panel's observations on what I think is kind of a new and disturbing trend in campaigning since Gary Tan, the internet billionaire, made the said that a certain supervisor should die, and then he doubled down and said die slowly, and he's since walked it back. But we saw at the Aaron Peskin rally, or when he announced for mayor, a counter-protest, and it I've read that some of the protesters were quite aggressive with some of the Chinese seniors, and it just seems like there's this new phenomenon campaigning in San Francisco where it almost seems like goon squads that are sent to press conferences and where mayors or candidates are speaking. And I'd like to get the panel's opinion on that observation. Is it right for internet billionaires to threaten murder to sitting supervisors and then walk it back and still have authority that he has?
Well, to be clear, he didn't threaten murder. But thank you, Peter, for the call. Joe, I think you went to Peskin's announcement and the counter rally. What was your take?
Well, so Peskin's announcement had 500 plus people. I've seen larger numbers, but I think 500-ish was accurate. And the rally outside of it, you know, I would say the rally outside of it stayed on the sidewalk outside of Portsmouth Square, which, you know, was a polite thing to do. They were shouting. They were trying to drown them out noisily with bullhorns and whistles and fly swatters swatting their signs. But, you know, I didn't see any violence or anything like that. Not that I had like a constant watching them. But, you know, it seemed to be a reasonable protest, if not politically gauche, not something you really see a lot.
Well, and I think Mark Farrell, he wasn't there, but he was certainly supportive of, and maybe his campaign organized
his campaign confirmed to me that they organized that rally.
They confirmed that, yeah.
And there were definitely some allies from some of those groups we're hearing about, like Neighbors was one of the groups that was had at least one person there. Together SF had a few officers there, and Aaron Peskin called that out on social media afterwards because they're trying to hold a political debate. How do you, as Peskin, go to a mayoral debate when the people who protested outside your rally are trying to host it? Like, so yes, we are seeing a little bit of a coarsening locally. I used to feel like local politics was a bit of an oasis from all this national nonsense, but increasingly not so.
And Heather, you know, it's interesting, Mark Farrell saying that Aaron Peskin is toxic, he doesn't play well with others, and here you have him, you know, organizing this kind of in-your-face rally, kind of a mixed message there.
Yeah. Yeah, he did confirm that he organized that and his campaign manager was running it. So I wasn't there, so you had a better view of that than I did. But yeah, I think local politics has gotten just as nasty as national politics. I think everybody across the country is so polarized and angry.
Yeah, and the caller mentioned Gary Tan, the billionaire. Oh, I know he says he's not a billionaire. Close. Close. Yeah. Kind of depends on where the stock market is on any given day, probably.
Today I learned what a centimillionaire was.
But what is your take on him, what he wants? You know, they say, what does Jesse Jackson want? Well, what does Gary Tan want? You know, is he trying to... Because he's given money to several folks, including London Breed. I mean, is he supporting her? What's he looking for?
Mm-hmm. He says he wants three things, which is a beefed up police department that can combat property crime and anti-Asian violence, a school district that pushes kids as far as they can go, and then what was the third thing? I'm forgetting what Mr. Tan said.
Yes, but he also has these lengthy video rants, like YouTube, is it? Where you can watch kind of all of his thoughts, his political thoughts spill out. And he is associated with these folks who want to kind of secede from government, like the folks who are down south who are trying to make their own city, the tech folks. He's part of that movement, or has been.
He's also very tied with YIMBY. He wants a lot more housing. So that's where he and Mayor Breed align a lot.
And, you know, in most places, that's like, okay, that makes sense. But here it's, you know, kind of what, outside the mainstream in some way? TBD, I guess.
We'll see
how the voters react, because that is very much what, you know, many of the candidates are saying. And, you know, what do you make of the recent election, Joe, where we saw two ballot measures that were put on the ballot by the mayor, one to give the police department more power and let them use more technology and pursue people, you know, alleged criminals who are fleeing, and another to do this drug screening for people who are getting public assistance. She says that shows that she's in line with the voters.
Well, right, and, you know, I don't think people...
I should say they both passed pretty easily.
Yes, they both passed, and those are both Mayor Breed's ballot measures. And, you know, I don't think people went into the ballot box going, wow, I really want to vote for Mayor Breed's ballot measures. But what I think it does do is give her the ability to put that on a mailer to your house and brag about how she was able to do so much for what voters wanted. And so that's giving her essentially ammo to make her argument.
Yeah, although Daniel Lurie did something kind of interesting. He created his own independent committee, raised money, and also put ads with him on TV, Heather, endorsing yes. that same ballot measure. So kind of spreading the credit out a little bit. What do you make of him? He's, as we've said, a philanthropist, comes from a wealthy family, has raised a lot of money, far more than the others, I think $3.8 million, something like that. A lot of it going to a committee that he doesn't control, mm-hmm. but nonetheless, you know, his mom gave a lot of money to that. How does an outsider fare in a race like this, do you think?
Yeah, I think his...
So-called outsider.
Right. Well, he's a native San Franciscan, grew up here, and he has... I think they've all raised similar amounts in the regular campaign financing system, but then there's this separate independent expenditure account that he has about $4 million, including $1 million from his mom. So can you imagine getting a check from your mom for $1 million?
I'd like to.
Yeah, geez. Yeah, mom, what you doing?
But I think he's struggling to, you know, kind of create a lane for himself. He seems kind of similar to Mayor Breed and Mark Farrell, and is sort of trying to stand out as being the one who can say, I've never worked at City Hall, so give me a shot.
Yeah. All right, let's go back to the phones, and we're going to go up to Sonoma and Richard in Sebastopol. Welcome.
Thank you. So as a California resident of 60 years and a San Francisco resident at times, I'm disappointed that Mayor Breed gets so little acknowledgement for showing up, being present, answering questions, coming to meetings, coming on KQED. She doesn't hide in the mayor's office. She is out there being the face of the city, and somehow, well, that's not enough. So I just feel that she deserves some acknowledgement for her efforts to be a present and a visible mayor of the city.
Joe, what are your thoughts?
You know, I'm really fascinated by the way the city has reacted and then forgotten how they've reacted to London Breed over certain times. Like, if you go back to February 2020, just before the pandemic craziness just all hit, you know, that's when the corruption scandal hit. And man, every headline about Mohammed Nuru and his ties to London Breed, one-time romantic partners, he fixed up a car for her, all this was really dominating the headlines. And then all of a sudden, COVID hits. And during that period of time, she was seen as a leader in the country. Her presence was elevated. Do we all remember this? Like,
well, I think, you know, she was even talked about as a potential successor to Dianne Feinstein if right. Newsom appointed a black woman.
Right. She had such a glow on her. I think all of San Francisco was incredibly grateful to London Breed for her actions during the pandemic. And then as we've shifted away from that and gone through this kind of public safety perception issue, then all of a sudden that has been attached to her. It's like we can't decide as a city how we feel about London Breed. That's why I find November so stymieing.
Heather, we haven't talked about this, but you know, she is among the top candidates, the only woman running. Mm-hmm. She's a woman of color. She has always relied heavily on her bio, which is very compelling. She grew up in public housing in the Western Addition, you know, has had a very troubled family. She has a brother who's in prison, sister, I believe, a family member who died of a drug overdose.
Right, uh-huh.
Yeah. So how does that figure into this? Especially, you know, she is going to, of course, go after women voters, you know, in particular. How does that work for her, do you think?
Yeah, I think her story really catapulted her in the last mayor's race, and she kind of stood out from the others after Ed Lee died because she has such an incredible story, and it's really inspiring, you know, being raised by her grandmother in public housing, native San Franciscan. Other family members, like you just said, had huge struggles, and she rose above it and became the leader of the city. But I think it's really interesting now that all of her challengers are straight white men and very wealthy, many of them. So it's a real difference. And I think people that I've heard want to judge her more now on what she's done in office and are less interested in the story.
Yeah, I was at a Chinatown banquet last Friday, and London was there. The mayor was there, pardon me.
Right before she left for China.
Right before she left for China. Well, she was touting all the business she was going to bring from overseas over here. She's trying to kind of sell herself a bit to the community, what she was about to do. Daniel Lurie was there. Aaron Peskin was there. But the thing I kept hearing from people, and I kept talking to them about her, you know, while she's speaking, I just kept hearing it over and over again. You know, I loved her story. I loved it. And now, you know, it's been 6 years. And just that refrain over and over, every person I talked to at that banquet.
Yeah. And she's also had more time in office than she might have. I mean, she had a year after Ed Lee, or sometime after Ed Lee died. And then, yeah, she got elected initially. And then also there would have been a mayoral election, I think, last year, Heather. Mm-hmm. And then the voters said, no, we're going to put the mayoral elections in the same year as presidential elections. So, you know, it's not like she's only had one term. She's kind of had one term plus, right?
Right. Yeah, she's been in office for a long time and was, of course, the president of the Board of Supervisors before that. So it's been a long, many years of London breeding power.
Yes, indeed.
She's also, Joe, she does blame, and this is a point that Peskin and others make, that she blames the board, she blames the courts, she blames things outside her control.
The media.
For a lot of her problems. How much truth is there in that, and how much of that is of her own making?
Well, you know, we do have a strong mayor system. As much as folks want to say the mayor should have some more power, you know, compared to other cities, she has more control over her departments, over commissions. So there is a lot to be said for that system and what can she do within that system.
Some listeners are commenting. Kevin writes, San Francisco has an abundance of natural and man-made beauty, but there's trash and litter everywhere. Encampments and tents are a daily reminder of the dysfunction of this lovely city. Open-air drug markets aren't a thing in other cities to the extent they are in San Francisco. Not sure Portland would agree with that, but and Phoenix, and you know, homelessness is really a big city problem. It goes well beyond San Francisco, but yeah. I think because we're so small, maybe it's more noticeable.
Right, like when you look per capita, like San Francisco is not nearly like near the top of the list in terms of homelessness per capita, but it is in our most visible neighborhoods where people walk, and we are a very walkable city.
Yeah. Michael tweets, I think ranked choice voting will give London Breed a fighting chance. I believe she is most people's second choice. Heather, a Chronicle poll suggested otherwise, but talk about ranked choice where now voters can, they can pick, I don't know if we have to explain this, but you pick your first, second, third, fourth if you want, fifth if you want choice. And then there's a whole algorithm that, you know, if you're first place candidate comes in last, they redistribute your second place votes until somebody gets above 50 plus one.
Right.
How does she fare in all this? How does that shift the dynamics?
I think the system so far will benefit Aaron Peskin unless the moderate groups can unite. Mark Farrell, of course, is already backing this anybody but Aaron Peskin idea where they would all tell their voters to put each other as second, third, fourth.
So, why Peskin?
Because he's the most different, especially on housing. So I think the rest would split their votes unless they come up with a strategy to, you know, do first, second, third, fourth.
But, Joe, you could also see a world in which either, say, Mark Farrell or Daniel Lurie is, you know, they you know, if your first vote is Aaron Peskin, would your second vote be, you know,
there are lots of,
London Breed? I don't know.
Yeah, it's interesting for us because we have these ideas about how these politicians relate to each other, right? But voters don't necessarily have all the same ideas about how they are. Mark Farrell, you know, has voiced some preservation of character views, although he has since walked them back to YIMBYs, which may mirror Peskin and his views on housing. So we might see that be a joiner. But then again, like for coalition, that anybody but Aaron thing that we've been talking about, Daniel Lurie doesn't really benefit from that, right? Because he's the outsider. How does your political messaging change if you all of a sudden have to say, oh, you should also vote Mark Farrell, you're number two, and London Breed, you're number three, if you're also trying to say those insiders are the ones responsible for how bad the city is?
Yeah.
The two don't mesh.
Well, and it'll be interesting to see, Heather, if there is some kind of an organized coalition and whether Mayor Breed is part of that. Because if you're talking about just political ideology, you'd think you'd have to group Breed kind of with Lurie and Farrell.
Right. But since we've talked about it, there's a lot of animosity between Breed and Farrell. Then it comes out strange to be like, oh, by the way, put him as my number two.
Yeah. So. All right. Back to the phones now. And Fred in San Francisco, you're next. Welcome.
Hi. Thanks so much for having me. Just a comment. I think that, you know, as someone who lives in San Francisco, raising a family in San Francisco, I think the panel might undervalue the sense of desperation and even panic that people really continue to have by the state of public safety encampments and just the rampant visible drug use in San Francisco. I think that when we think about the low approval ratings for Mayor Breed, I feel like most of the people that I know and talk to, it's not a really high bar. But it's a real sense that the most basic fundamental public safety needs of the city are not being met.
Yeah. And Joe, to his point, that's kind of about maybe competence more than ideology. It's like, who can get things done? Who can clean up the streets? Who can fix the homeless problem, which, by the way, has been going on for decades and decades.
Well, for decades. I mean, I born and raised in San Francisco. I remember a homeless guy in our neighborhood who called himself Donald Duck, and he used to tell all the kids, "Hey, I'm Donald Duck." Had streamers coming out of his hair. We've had homelessness for decades, but at the same time, is London Breed, what is she doing about it right now? Is she changing the way people feel? And that is a thing, the thing that she says, even she even acknowledges it. It is not about necessarily data. It's how I make people feel.
Yeah. And Heather, we've seen the mayor, you know, some might say tried something and then stopped and done something else. She declared a state of emergency at one point in the Tenderloin and that expired. And then she kind of moved on to something else. How much of that sort of lack of stick-to-itiveness do you think is a problem for her in terms of her image and the way she's governed?
Yeah, I think it's a big problem. I think, as we keep saying, people just want, you know, movement in a forward direction, you know, change, common sense, getting things done, a city that works. And when she's the Tenderloin and drug issue is a perfect example. For a long time as supervisor, she kept saying supervised consumption sites. She supported those. She had a mock-up at Glide to show how it would work. And everybody thought, oh, we might be the first city. I actually wrote at the Chronicle that San Francisco was on the verge of becoming the first city in the country to open these. And then it just all fell apart. And then she backed away and it was never clear why. And then, you know, different solutions. Then the March ballot measure was, instead, we're going to screen all welfare recipients right. for drugs. I mean, it's just very confusing. Like, what is the direction?
Pinballing around a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's interesting to see that now the candidates now are really backing away from that idea of like a supervised consumption site. Like Mark Farrell with his fentanyl emergency plan, he really wants to embrace sobriety as a chief option and away from harm reduction. So we might see, as a response to Mayor Breed and what she's done, this further rightward move in how we handle the drug crisis.
Yeah. Heather, we're almost out of time here, but we have some very viable candidates now. Is there room for another one, and who might that be? Or is this pretty much the field, do you think?
I think it's a field. The one name I've heard floated around, although I don't think he wants to do it, is David Chu. So maybe in 4 years,
the city attorney.
Yeah, this is probably the field.
Yeah, and so we'll find out. We'll be covering it, of course, between now and then. Thank you both so much. Heather Knight, San Francisco Bureau Chief for the New York Times. Joe Fitzgerald Rodriguez, our own KQED politics reporter. Thanks so much for joining us. And I'm Scott Schaefer here this hour for Alexis Madrigal. Stick around for another hour of Forum with Mina Kim. Thanks for listening.
Funds for the production of KQED's Forum are provided by the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, the Generosity Foundation, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Heising Simons Foundation.
Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply, not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.